This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
I'm Anna Garcia with True Crime News, the podcast. Every crime tells a story. Every story demands justice. True Crime News, the podcast, covers breaking crimes, investigating high-profile and under-the-radar cases. Every week, we dive beyond the headlines, exploring the effects of violent crimes on victims and search for justice. We hope you join us as your weekly source for true crime news. Listen to and follow True Crime News, the podcast, on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to Speed City with John Massengill, Bob Varsha, and Jonathan Green. It's the fastest hour on the radio, Speed City.
All right, gearheads, welcome to the show. Welcome to our Formula One post-race show for the Spanish Grand Prix, where we watch Max Verstappen hold off Lando Norris in his McLaren and for the win by 2.2 seconds for Max Verstappen and a podium. First podium of the year for Lewis Hamilton. This John Massengill in the studio in Austin, Texas, joined by Mr. Bob Varsha. Jonathan Green will not be with us today, and Chris Medlin will be joining us live with his microphone from Barcelona here in just a few minutes. Bob Varsha, Max Verstappen looked like Max Verstappen of old for most of the day today, although there was definitely a battle. It may not have even had the fastest car, arguably.
I agree completely. I think Lando Norris was right when he said, I had the fastest car. And he put his hand in the air and said, this was totally on me. Started from pole, got a bad getaway. George Russell and Max Verstappen got ahead of me, and it was a struggle the rest of the day. But he had a shot late in that race. It was a real Formula One purist's race with the tire strategies going on and changing all the time. Some guys go into a two-stop, three-stop strategy. Good amount of overtaking, lovely day in Spain, although it looked like it might rain for a while. So on the whole, yeah, I think it was a terrific day at the racetrack.
Yeah, and the pit stop strategies played into this, and not only the strategies, but the actual pit stops themselves, because we saw Max Verstappen with a 1.9-second pit stop, which I think...
Yeah, how about that?
Yeah, I think maybe they tied for the fastest of the year. He did have a slower one later in the race at a 2.8, but also... Norris had a 2.4, and later in the race had another close to 3 second stop. So, you know, there's definitely time made up for Verstappen in the pit stops, which Red Bull has just been, they've just been the king at that lately. You know, McLaren's been good, but still not as good as Red Bull.
Yeah, I love Chris's expression before the race about, you know, 4, 5, 6 seconds of work by that 17-man pit crew could make the difference in the race. But we actually saw Carlos Sainz overtake in the pits with a quicker stop by the Ferrari boys. So we saw a lot of good ones, including that 1.9-second stop. But we also saw some really faulty ones. There seemed to be a lot of rear wheel problems for these teams, including some of the crack crews. So, you know, that's the way it works sometimes. You've got to have the full team effort. I don't know that it made a difference in the race. Verstappen was in control all the way, showing once again that, you know, he is the master right there, and probably Red Bull's greatest hope of keeping the Constructors' Championship, if not both drivers and constructors, because although Sergio Perez got up into the points from his lowly starting position, they cannot count, it appears, on Perez to keep producing reliable points. So they're going to need everything Verstappen can give them from his considerable driving arsenal of skills to maximize points because they're going to need them. Lando Norris passes Charles Leclerc of Ferrari. Norris is now second in the championship and looks like he could be a real challenger to Verstappen this year. And, you know, the McLaren team could draw closer to Red Bull. So we're not even at halfway yet. And this is going to be a really exciting season.
Absolutely. That's a good point, Bob. Well, let me just run down the whole finishing order in case you missed it. Verstappen wins the race, followed by Lando Norris, followed by Lewis Hamilton, and then George Russell and the other Mercedes, and then the two Ferraris, Leclerc and Sainz, fifth and sixth. Oscar Piastri, Lando's teammate, down in seventh, and Max Verstappen's teammate, Checo Perez, down in eighth. And then the two Alpine cars, Gasly and Ocon, both finishing in the points, ninth and tenth. And Hülkenberg in his favorite position, number 11. I think that may be his fifth time this year. And if you go back in history, look at Haas F1, they have finished 11th more times than I can count. And Fernando Alonso down in 12th, Zhou Guan Yu 13th, Lance Stroll 14th, Daniel Ricciardo well ahead of his teammate in 15th, and Valtteri Bottas in 16th, Kevin Magnussen, the other Haas car, in 17th, and Albon in 18th, Tsunoda 19th, and Logan Sargeant bringing up the rear in 20th position. But yeah, I was just laughing at Nico Hülkenberg. I don't know, and Haas, they finished it 11 times. So many times. It's not really funny, I'm sure, for them, because that's
a
horrible position.
Yeah, they ought to warm them up. Give them an honorary point or something for finishing 11th so many times in a row. Two by two by two, five teams, two cars in the top 10. I'm not sure exactly what that tells us, except they're getting good reliability and good race pace up front among those five teams. And, you know, that's where the battle will focus the rest of the season.
Yeah. And how about those Alpine cars, you know, with starting off, it's such a tumultuous year for them, and having a great qualifying and then both cars in the points. You got to be happy if you're on that team.
Yeah. I think every time you see those two guys close together, everybody kind of cringes, waits to see what's going to happen. And having said that, you might say the same about the Ferrari guys. Carlos Sainz complained that Leclerc gave him a pop in the wheel in the first lap. So, you know, there's no quarter being asked or given there among the red cars. So, yeah, that's going to be interesting going forward, particularly since, as we know, Carlos Sainz will not be in that car next year. So Leclerc really kind of has a blank check to handle the intra-team relationships as he chooses. And that's okay. You don't have to mention that I picked the top three drivers, just got them in the wrong order.
I was thinking that I did that too, because I chose Hamilton to win. But maybe I thought I had Hamilton, Verstappen, Norris, but I didn't write it down, honestly. I don't remember. So.
Maybe you did. Maybe you did.
Let's see. Oh, you know, we have to talk about the start of the race, because George Russell looked like he had rocket boosters going around the outside, because he obviously caught a toe from Lando Norris and blasted up into first. And by about halfway through the first lap, he had a sizable gap ahead of Verstappen.
That was such a beautiful move. Yeah, threading the needle there between the front runners and going around the outside at turn one at Barcelona. I mean, as David Hobbs used to say, that takes some big attachments, and he did it beautifully. And we heard Verstappen say afterwards, you know, I knew I had to get him back right away, because otherwise it was going to be a long day. Turns out, I don't think he really needed to, but nevertheless, it was a great opening few laps there as the front runners battled. And, you know, as I said, Norris said, you know, it was all down to my poor start, despite being on the clean line as the pole sitter. Frankly, Verstappen just got a rocket start. I mean, he deserves all the credit in the world, I think, for that getaway, because it was really good. And having being forced onto the grass by Norris.
Yeah, no doubt. Did you hear the crowd when Hamilton stepped up onto the podium, to the microphone?
Yeah.
I mean, that was actually pretty cool to see. And there was some great racing there with Lewis Hamilton, wasn't there?
Yeah, definitely. You know, I guess the great champions relish their opportunities. You know, even a guy like Hamilton, who had so much sustained success over so many years, much like Verstappen is having right now, you know, they're still racers. They still appreciate the good times when they're having them, because they've been through some bad times too. Hamilton's first podium, first top three qualifying this year, first podium in the Grand Prix. Things are looking up for Lewis, and I'm sure he appreciates it, as does George Russell. But given what Lewis has done in recent years with 7 world championships with 2 teams, I think he realizes that these opportunities are not going to come that often, you know, now that he's in his late 30s. Enjoy them while they're here. And he's always been great with the fans. He's always, you know, he'll turn around and salute the fans of the grandstand across the way.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think that's what champions do.
Chris Medlin, did you hear that? Enjoy your 30s while you can.
I'm only halfway through them. Come on.
They flash by, Chris. Trust me.
Hey, Chris.
Oh, believe me. I keep forgetting how old I am. I got to tell people that I'm a certain age. And I'm like, oh, hang on. Right. No, there's another year on that.
Right. I have to count. When was I born?
Yeah. Hey, Chris, we were just talking about how the crowd was just roaring when Hamilton stepped up to the microphone after the race.
Yeah, we could hear it in the media center as well. And I'm going to hopefully see if I can grab Toto Wolff to kind of give his reaction to that, because there were some pretty bolshy comments from Mercedes about some of the criticism they were facing after Canada about the treatment of their drivers that I think he feels like they've probably proven a point today. One, because, you know, they did split the strategies to see which one worked out best. But two, it actually went wrong for Russell, didn't it? He ended up on the wrong tire and had a really slow pit stop. So, if anyone's going to be upset, it's going to be the other driver. But it was great to see Hamilton kind of capitalize. And I think we had the order behind Verstappen that I went for, wasn't it? We had Norris, Hamilton, Russell as the next 3 in a row. But, Max was there.
Yeah, and Bob and I were talking about some good battles with Lewis Hamilton. And just great to see it. You know, he had the aggressive move on Carlos Sainz, and they touched apparently, but just how good was it to see Lewis Hamilton in those battles?
Yeah, I watched that replay twice where you had the onboard front facing and rear facing, and I'm not convinced there was contact. They came very, very close, but I'm not convinced that they actually touched. It's so tight, so difficult to see.
Yeah,
but that tells you if it was any contact, it was the lightest of contact. But when I saw that the stewards had noted it, I actually wrote on Twitter, I said, if that gets investigated, the game's gone. Because that's a favorite term of kind of soccer fans or soccer pundits whenever they don't like something that's happened and they say, oh, the game's gone. But there's just no way you could have penalized that sort of move. It was robust. It was clean, I felt. But on a track like this as well, it's what we want to see. And look, Carlos will get out the car. I know he's complaining. You're always going to complain when you lose a position. I think you'll watch it back and be like, okay, you know, I'd have done the exact same move. But at the time, you're trying to defend the place that you had and make sure you don't lose it. That was one where I can understand what he's complaining about, but there was nothing to answer. Like you say, great to see that kind of aggressive, positive Hamilton today. And basically this weekend, he's looked happier in the way that he's managed to kind of build on the weekend, and it's not fallen away like in the past.
You know, we just haven't seen the Mercedes car stable enough to do this. And we saw George Russell blast around with the fantastic move in the draft and the threading the needle, as you put it, Bob. And then we're seeing Hamilton with the confidence to do this. We just haven't seen this from the Mercedes car at all since, 2021? I mean, it feels like it.
Yeah, since they went after that, side pod free design scheme, and they've had to step back race by race by race, sort of eat humble pie and try to find a solution. And it looks like they're getting there.
Yeah, it's just so good to see that. I mean, it's so good to see 4 teams in this battle, but...
We saw an especially aggressive Hamilton today. You know, in recent races, I think we maybe saw a little disgruntled Hamilton or resigned to his fate in the race, finishing outside the top 3 or 4. But boy, today he pulled some great passes, including one on the Ferrari. I think it was Carlos Sainz he went by. A lot of passing around the outside. I think probably Pirelli needs some kudos for their tires today, because people were really pushing those tires to the end of their lifespan, still getting decent grip, using scuffed soft tires at the end. I mean, those Pirellis were being used every different way. A lot of marbling offline on the front stretch particularly, but they really went well.
Yeah, and Max Verstappen, when he took the lead back from George Russell right at the start of the race, I guess it was about fourth or fifth lap in, and he still had those fresh tires. He came around Russell just glued to the track. It was visibly noticeable, wasn't it? I mean, he just looked like that car was stuck to the track like a slot car when he came around. So, yeah, kudos. Kudos to Pirelli. You listen to Speed City, back after these messages.
when you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, like Alo, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Alo, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Hello to everyone. This is Gunther Steiner. This is Speed City.
Welcome back to the fastest hour in radio, Speed City.
All right, Mr. Medlin, let's go out to your microphone and tell us what's happening out there. Give us the eyes and ears.
This is the chaotic part. If you think the race was chaotic, I'm already in the middle of a building site. Everyone's in high-vis clothing, tearing down their motorhomes and garages because we've got to get to Austria for the next race, and they're driving everything right there. So obviously, when we're at flyaway races, say it was Miami or Canada, the stuff from Canada is going to go, I think, to probably Azerbaijan. Yeah. It'll be the later
Middle
in the
East,
year.
Yeah,
so it's got loads of time. So they just kind of pack it down slowly. There's no huge rush. Here, everything that's here right now making up the paddock and everyone's home is going to get driven across to Austria and be set up in 4 days' time for me to be interviewing everyone in the paddock there on Thursday. So it's, chaotic in here. But I'd gone down to Alpine. I feel like we're going to repeat yesterday's show a little bit because we're going to have it won't be quite as happy in McLaren, obviously, after Lando was on pole and only got second today. But I think we'll have a happy McLaren with the pace they've shown. We'll have Red Bull, as always, in a pretty good mood. And I'll try and get Christian Horner because I want to know, truthfully, what the feeling is going to be, because they were not the quickest car or team here in this race. That was, Lando was quicker. Track position was the key. The start, losing out at the start, cost him massively. Also losing nearly a second in his final pit stop compared to Max's final pit stop. And he finished 2.2 seconds behind. I mean, that makes a big difference as well. So, I think there's a load of factors there that just meant it stopped him getting there. But we were expecting Red Bull to be back to the dominant team, if not with the advantage they had at the start of the year, but to be quickest here. And to not have that says a lot about the rest of the season in my book. So I want to know what he has to say, Christian Horner. If I can find Toto Wolff, I'll do that as well. I'm basically listing everyone I want to speak to. But I was going down to Alpine to look for Bruno Famin because they had double points at Alpine today. Bruno's not in view at the moment. So I'm going to head back to the Ferrari end and see if we can get Fred Vasseur. We haven't had his dulcet tones on the show this weekend yet, have we?
We have not. Again, it relaxes me when we have him on the show, his voice and tone and tenor. So please get him on. But Bob Varsha brought up something really important, Chris, is that, when you have Gasly and Ocon side by side from the start of the race and finish side by side in 9th and 10th, something has gone right at Alpine that they haven't crashed into each other or, had words over the radio. So it ought to be happy down at Alpine.
Yeah, it really should. They took their chances. I think if I was looking at the timing screens right, because I'll admit I wasn't closely following movement on it, but I looked at the final lap times. I'm pretty sure Sergio Perez passed Pierre Gasly for 8th on the final lap.
Yes, he did.
I mean, that will probably frustrate Gasly a little bit, but it's still double points, which is another really strong result. I'm just positioning myself behind the local broadcasters from DAZN here in Spain, who are doing a great job with their coverage of F1 here in Spain, because as we're talking about pre-race, the interest around Alonso and Sainz is one thing, but you need to keep that interest going when there's not a race-winning Spanish driver. And obviously, one day Alonso's not going to be on the grid anymore, and they're interviewing Fred Vasseur right now, and then I'm going to grab him, as promised.
Well, Sainz is certainly generating headlines for them as his employment saga continues. I just did a quick check, and this surprised me. You talked about the construction zone you're in because everybody's tearing down to start the drive to Spielberg, the site of the next race in Austria. How far do you think it is from Barcelona to Spielberg, Austria? Anybody?
I'm going to go with about 1,600 kilometers.
What's that in real money?
Oh, good. I'm glad you said that. 900 miles? 1,000 miles?
It's 1,000 miles, almost on the dot.
There we go.
Somebody's looking at a 15, 16-hour drive.
Chris, you missed it by 5 miles. I did the math. That's pretty impressive.
Oh, well, come on. Someone give me that.
Over the years.
Give me that for 5 miles.
I'll definitely give it to
some
you.
Some of these races. Yeah, I've not gone between these two by road. I've gone from what's the French Grand Prix at Paul Ricard, so quite a way across the Mediterranean to Spielberg by road in the past. Actually, in a McLaren, and I took it around Imola on the way. That was fun. It's not a close one. That is why, actually, that does explain a lot. Having this back-to-back with Austria, that's a long drive. So that's why they need to get this packed down even quicker than usual. Because you think about it, 8 hours could be the difference. 8 hours extra on the road.
Yeah.
8 hours fewer to get set up ahead of the start of the race weekend.
It's a whole work day. Mm-hmm. At least in the United States.
I've cornered Fred before he heads inside. And Fred, fifth and sixth today, where you qualified, is that kind of what you're expecting at the start of the race?
Well, you are always expecting a bit better, but... At the end, it's also the reality of Barcelona that the top six is almost the grid, except Lando and Max who swapped. But it is like it is now. We have to do, I think, if we miss something, it's much more yesterday than today.
Yeah, I was going to say, on race pace, was it kind of hampered by your track position as such behind the Mercedes drivers?
You finish 20 seconds behind after 70 laps. It's 2/10 a lap, that's a bit less if you consider the start and the traffic. It means that I think the delta pace is almost the same as yesterday, and it's probably yesterday that we missed something, because if we start 3 and 4, I think we are doing 3 and 4.
You also brought an upgrade here again. You've been pushing hard on that front, brought it early. Did that do everything you'd hoped? Is that side of the team working well?
Yeah, we did a great job at the factory to be ready a bit earlier, and we will push in the same way for the next one, and let's see next week that it would be a good opportunity for us with a different format and a different layout. And perhaps that will be in a better shape next week.
Well, everyone was predicting as well coming here that Red Bull wouldn't run away with it, wouldn't have the advantage they had at the start of the season. Maybe four teams would be in the fight. It looks like it is based on today. Is that what you see too?
Yeah. That if you have a look on the last 4 or 5 weekends, that McLaren did a pole, Mercedes did a pole, we did a pole, Verstappen did a pole, not even in China. Or Imola. It means that the last 4 quali was 4 different teams doing the pole position. And it will be like this, I hope, until the end of the season. It means that you have to be opportunistic, because that you have to win when you are able to win and score good points when you are not. And I think today we did what we had to do.
I've always asked it, though, about the Constructors' Championship. Again, solid points from both drivers. Do you feel that that is a title that you can go for this year?
Yeah, but I'm not thinking about the championship. I'm focused on next weekend. To try to do the best, and we have still 14 races to go, and it's 2 times the championship of the endurance. It means that it means that we have to stay focused on the race after race, and it's so tight that I think it would be a mistake to think far away and to imagine about the championship. And so let's score points every single weekend to do the best of what we can, and we'll see at the end.
Okay, well, great stuff. And let's see you in 4 days in Austria.
Chris, does he have a McLaren hat on? Ask him, where's his McLaren hat?
No McLaren hat on this time. Zach hasn't got to him with the McLaren hat this time. He's looking out for him.
Hey, I missed something at the beginning of there. I do love Fred Vasseur and especially his accent too, but I missed, did he say something about Toto at the very beginning of the interview there?
No, not that I heard. My question was about starting fifth and sixth and staying fifth and sixth. And he said, yeah, that's kind of what happens when that's the kind of the story of Barcelona. If you're in traffic,
yeah, okay.
You know, you can't overtake, you're going to end up there. And he said, 20 seconds in terms of race time, that's 2/10 of that over this race distance. So, you know, if you're stuck in traffic, that's where you're going to end up.
Mm. Yeah. Just ask Lando.
Yeah,
exactly.
Who's stuck behind George Russell for so long.
Well,
yeah, that really was the costly thing.
And I was going to ask the same question. I put in my notes, could Piastri have done any better? It's hard here, isn't it?
Big time. I think that's something to maybe to ask the driver themselves. I'll see if I can get Oscar, someone we haven't spoken about or too much this weekend. So I'll try and position myself to steal him as he walks back to the McLaren hospitality.
Great stuff with Fred Vasseur, by the way. And by the way, I will put Medlin's grid walk and paddock walk against anybody, Martin Brundle, any of them. I mean, what? You almost got run over by a car this morning. You almost got hit by Daniel Ricciardo. You almost got hit by a trolley. I mean, I know that's all perilous stuff, but the interviews are good too, Chris. But But anyway,
I did get hit by a trolley, I'd like to say. That was my left elbow took a good old whack. When we were in a break, I actually checked it wasn't bleeding. But
was it your microphone arm?
No, the wrong one. That was my problem. I think I probably had. I was doing my teapot. I quite often stand with microphone in one hand and my hand on my hip with the other when I'm kind of frowning, looking around at who I want to speak to next. And I think I was just sticking out too far on a busy grid, so it's my own fault. But it's going to happen sometimes. It's so hectic. I'm going to get in someone's way at some point, aren't I?
True that. It is really crazy out there. I know from personal experience. And it always makes for a good interview when whoever you're talking to looks at you and you're kind of looking for, you know, the next interview. You know, it's like, you know, being at the dance and you were going to ask a girl to dance and you're looking around at who you're going to ask next. Anyway,
you're bringing up some really bad memories for me, Bob.
Well, you do have to ask the girl to dance.
Oh, you actually have to. I thought you just had to show up and look like a giant nerd.
No, you don't just grab one. You have to go out and ask.
I tell you what.
Say this for Fred Vassour.
You stop resisting me, and I will stop resisting you.
I don't know where Casey got that one.
Pepe Le Pew. Fred Vassour is nothing if not consistent. He always says, we're not looking at the championship. We don't look at that kind of stuff. We're just going race to race.
Chris, I hear your microphone. What's going on over there?
That's just me being in a very busy part of the paddock right now and trying to see if when Oscar Piastri is done with his interview with F1 TV, we can talk to him and we're going to walk with him all the way down the paddock. We're going to help him get through all of these fans and guests. And that's getting a nice smile and a nod from Harry Ball, who is looking after him from McLaren. And Harry, who I'm glad to say, got out of that moto when it was on fire earlier. Or yesterday. So, I've said all that on air so that he hears me because he's trying to listen to what Oscar says on this interview right now and I'm really distracting him. So I'm going to walk away and come back ready when Oscar is done with his F1 TV interview. But we will get a chat with him.
That is a very smart tactic. Mention the handler's name on air so you can flatter him a little bit.
Oh, of course. Yeah. That's flattery gets me everywhere in this paddock.
Hey, so Chris, anybody hurt in that fire?
It was just one team member was taken to hospital for precautionary checks. Which was generally smoke inhalation, and they were discharged later that afternoon, so they were okay.
That must be an interesting, derig to watch at the McLaren hospitality, because I'm sure they've got insurance people and fire marshals and whatever trying to figure out what the heck happened. The team issued a press release, or a statement at least, that I saw on Twitter afterward, saying that nobody was badly hurt. And they thanked the other teams in the pit lane, apparently several of which came forward and said, hey, come on over here and use our stuff, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, that is cool.
Yeah, Williams were one such team, I was told. Admittedly, I'm sure there's multiple, but yeah, Williams were one such team that said any McLaren guests, essentially, that needed somewhere to go and hang out, whatever, could do that. It was very kind of them. And admittedly, it's kind of speculation at the moment because they've been looking into it. But I'm hearing that the fire actually originated underneath the floor on the ground floor. But then the way the ventilation system works, it was pumping the smoke out higher up on the first floor. So they were trying to douse flames or trying to attack something that they thought was between the ground and first floors. It was actually lower down than that. So it took longer for them to actually get to put it out. And it became a bit of a challenging situation.
Wow, that is pretty scary.
That makes it even more remarkable that nobody was hurt.
Yeah.
When you're not hitting the fire with the extinguishers because you don't know where it is. That's sketchy.
Hey, Chris, we got to get a break in. Should we do it now or are you about to get that interview?
I think I'm about to get that interview because Pierre Gasly's shown up to chat to F1 TV as well. And I imagine that means they'll let Oscar go, which they are doing right now.
Brilliant.
So that's me picking my time brilliantly. And I'm telling now James Lloyd from Alpine that I'll come back for Pierre as well. Oscar, just going to help you through the crowds here. Looks like it's been a tough weekend results wise, but good pace wise. I guess yesterday really undid you without getting a lap in Q3.
You're more optimistic than me. I think the whole weekend's been very tough, to be honest. I think from the first lap of Friday, it just did not come naturally this weekend, and I mean, didn't really come at all. So. Yeah, definitely some things to look over. I think the second half of the race looked a little bit more positive, but overall just a tough one. So need to understand why that was the case.
Well, even when you say that, you were closing right in on the Ferraris towards the end of the race. That you were just over 2 seconds behind Carlos at the flag. I mean, how confident are you about how quick this McLaren is when you do get it right?
Yeah, I think we can be very confident. You know, obviously Lando showed the potential of the car this weekend. I think the last sort of five tracks we've been to have been pretty much every set of track and you know weather conditions you can get. So the fact that we've been so quick every time and on every different type of track is very, very encouraging. And yeah, obviously exciting for everyone watching and still well and truly in the fight.
Were you expecting to be this close to Red Bull in terms of the pace Lando's shown and what the car's shown, given everyone's saying Red Bull will be back on top here? It might be closer, but they'll be back on top.
I think maybe exceeded our expectations a little bit. I think we were still confident we could be strong. Obviously on my side of the garage has been a tough one, but I think it's not been totally unexpected how we've been this weekend in terms of potential and pace. So exciting for the races to come. Austria and Silverstone last year were pretty happy hunting ground. So hopefully we can keep that the same.
Glad to be able to go racing straight away again next week.
Yes, definitely.
Well, I'll let you go. Thank you very much, Oscar, for your time. Who I can tell you is actually going to the FIA hospitality unit because he can't go into the McLaren one. That's the one he's using right now.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah, with the smoke. All right, guys, we got to get a quick break in. And when we come back, we'll have more on the Spanish Grand Prix after this.
From BBC F1, you are listening to Speed City.
Welcome back to the fastest hour in radio, Speed City.
Thank you, Jenny. Boys, do you know, without looking, who got driver of the day? Take a guess.
Lando Norris.
Did you look or did you guess?
Yeah, I'll go with it.
I saw on Twitter before I came down to do the bulletins and jump on the show.
You kids and your social media.
No, Chris, you're supposed to say, in my view... It was like, you don't say, oh, yeah, I saw the results. So
I feel like that was a vote, though, that was based on Lando adding excitement of trying to close down Max.
Yeah.
But realistically, yes. A guy that wasn't in the fastest car, who made the moves when he had to make it. These are actually questions I can put to Christian Horner now because he's just right. Just come free. So I'll actually put it directly to him once he's had a little briefing, I believe. Christian, I was just saying, Lando Norris won driver of the day. And I said, but then Max Verstappen didn't have the quickest car, it looked like, from the outside today. He made the move stick when he had to early on. He made a good start and he won a Grand Prix under pressure. Is that a fair assessment of Max's performance?
Yes. And I think that what you have to remember is that McLaren run a slightly offset strategy. So at times they're 9 seconds behind, but that's never the real deficit because, you know, with the offset of a better tyre, that gap is always going to close. So that sometimes accentuates what the difference in the cars looks like. But they've got a very quick car. Lando's driving it very well. And today was all about small margins. And Max, you know, delivered the start, passing Lando, nailing, George very quickly, and then managing the perfect race. And, it was always going to get closer at the end, but we felt that we should have just enough, to hold Lando off.
If I put it another way, though, if they were the top two, Max leading Lando at the end of lap one, do you think you have enough to hold them off from that point if they were line astern? Was the McLaren a bit quicker today?
The McLaren was quick, particularly at the end of the stints. You can see their degradation is good. So that's an area that we need to work on. I think we're taking a lot of good lessons out of these last few races.
Well, yeah, I want to put it that way. People almost do seem to get bored with the same team and same driver winning. But I made the point that I think the last three races won by Max arguably have been won without having the best car or the fastest car. And the team and he have executed perfectly. Is that a strength that's maybe been underappreciated about how well you guys perform, even when you don't have the performance advantage you have had?
Well, I think the key is always to deliver to your optimum and deliver under pressure. And I think that's where the team's done an incredible job of, you get found out. When you're running at the front, there's nowhere to hide. And the strategy's got to be good. The pit stops have got to be sharp. The starts have got to be good. And the driver's got to deliver. And all of those things are happening, which is why we've won 70% of the races so far. Now, four of those races have been incredibly tight. But, we keep doing enough to keep our opposition behind us.
Yeah, but that opposition looks very close. What's it looking like for the rest of the season? Has this been a yardstick that it's going to be like this all the way through?
It will swing around, I'm sure, over the next part of the season, for sure. And there'll be some circuits that suit us. There'll be some circuits that suit Ferrari or McLaren that seem to be becoming the most consistent. of challenges, and Mercedes are up and down. So, I mean, behind Lando and Max today, there was circa 18 seconds to the cars behind, which is the same gap as last year.
But then Checo was kind of nowhere in that race based on track position, based on the penalty he had and where he qualified. How quickly do you need to get him back up in that fight because of the points that other teams are starting to score?
Well, I think Hill had taken a bit of confidence out of today. He drove a good race. P8 on all our simulations in a normal race was his maximum. He achieved that. So he achieved his target today.
And thoughts on Austria next week?
Great to be heading to our home race. A packed, sold-out Austrian crowd sprint race. I'm looking forward to having some Wiener Schnitzel and, getting back in front of the home crowd.
Well, we're looking forward to another competitive weekend, but well done today.
Chris, no other
don't
hat.
Ignore the strudel.
No other hats for Christian Horner? No Mercedes hat?
No, they don't quite have kind of relationship, do they? Toto Wolff is not far away from him either, but Toto's not wearing a hat either. So I'll see if we can grab a word with him in a bit. He's in a big scrum that's going to be tough to get into the middle of. And I'm going to head back down towards Alpine. I mentioned them earlier.
Yeah,
I want to see if there's anyone from Alpine I can speak to, because I think double points again. And it was pointed out, and I think actually Bob might have mentioned it in the pre-race show, but you know, the turnaround from Alpine, maybe it's in yesterday's show, but you know, from where they started the season.
Yeah.
It's we've not been a greater storyline about Flavio Briatore's return this weekend, but you've got to just look solely at the car and its performance and the improvement of that car through the year so far. Very impressive. And these are the sorts of things that then make it look like someone like Aston Martin are having a terrible run. Because actually we're seeing some really big gains from certain teams. Mercedes obviously made huge strides this year from where they started. And Alpine the same now, putting themselves right in that point scoring mix.
I wanted to talk about pit lane speeding. I think Magnussen and Tsunoda had a 5-second penalty and maybe more others. Also noticed more lockups than usual in heading up to the speed limit line. Was that just me?
That one you get quite a lot here in terms of speed limit line, because it's so high speed into that. Normally the final corner's flat out. They do lift off a bit, but it's a quick pit entry. And it's 22 seconds you lose the pit lane. So you're trying to minimize how much time you're going to lose. And that's a big gain or loss is how much you attack that pit entry line. Now, also, you can ruin your tires. Yeah, you can hammer on the brakes and ruin them because you're not going to use them anymore. So it doesn't matter. I think it was Hülkenberg who was done for pit lane speeding alongside Tsunoda, which will have been, I think, exactly at that point, like you say, just pushing the entry a bit too hard.
Okay.
Partly as well, because if you're trying to overcut or undercut another driver, because track position is so key here, you're really going to push the limits there. It's almost worth the risk. And then Magnussen actually got done for jumping the start.
Yeah, that's what it was.
So, that was a bit odd. I haven't seen a replay of that, but there's been a few of those more recently. I don't know if it's like clutch issues. Not really quite sure on the reason why we had, three or four occasions that they
I wonder if there's a common clutch vendor manufacturer out there that has an issue. That's just a random thought. But hey, going back to the pit lane speeding, I've noticed what you did. Obviously, the lockups, right? And you don't care about your tires. But how do you when you lock up a tire, that's the first thing they taught me at Skip Barber Race School, was that when you lock up a tire, you have no control, right? So you're locking up your tires. I think you lock them up and you skid right across the line at a faster rate of speed and you break the speed limit and get a penalty. So I don't know why so much lockup. It seems like a not a great strategy.
Well, you're not intentionally going to lock up, as you're saying, and still be on the brakes. But it's that you are hitting them that hard because you're attacking that line so hard. And also, because you're then slowing to quite a slow speed, 80 kilometers an hour is slow for an F1 car, then you're getting less downforce from the car working aerodynamically. So therefore, you're more likely to lock the tire.
But and they probably don't practice that a lot either.
No, exactly. Because they'll practice attacking the pit entry, but normally their reaction as a racing driver would be to get off the brake a little bit to stop that lockup happening and to rotate the wheel again. But you can't afford to do that going to the pit entry because you're going to hit that line. So I think it just leads to that ongoing lockup. But good point. It was a bigger kind of issue or notable issue today than at many races.
And as you pointed out, it's a long pit lane. We saw some pit entries. I think I recall Lando Norris. I mean, they come whomping into that pit lane, before they jump on the brakes to get down to the pit lane speed limit at the line we've been discussing. And I'm sure it's really easy to get that wrong.
Certainly is. They've got to try and maximize every bit. And as we talked about, 2.2 seconds today is the gap at the line. 0.8 of that we can attribute to the second round of pit stops. That was the difference between Verstappen's and Norris's second pit stops. And they have it as well. Yeah, if you can gain another couple of tenths on the entry, there's a full second. That's half the gap between the two cars at the end of the race. So it's so crucial.
And obviously the thing you don't want to do is get nicked for speeding in the pit lane. You don't care if you lock up the tires on your pit entry because you're taking them off anyway. You just want to do it as efficiently as possible time-wise to minimize the damage.
Hey, Chris, while we're waiting on you to grab somebody else, I want to talk about this headline this week about Brad Pitt's Formula One movie gets a June 2025 release date. So apparently June 27th. Nationally, and I think June 20, or is that here in the States? But around June 27th.
Other way around, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, 25th, which chat about it on Wheel to Wheel as well, didn't we, in the week? But yeah, 25th of June next year is the international one. And for some reason, two extra days, everyone has to wait in North America. So I'll give you the full review on the show this time next year.
Just take your phone in and film it for me so I can watch it early, Chris, like the Seinfeld episode. Hey, also, you're going to be able to watch it.
I wonder if they're going to take it to the
IMAX. You can be able to watch it IMAX. Was that what you're going to say, Bob?
No, I was going to wonder if they're going to take it to the Cannes Film Festival.
Oh, yeah.
Because occasionally I turn up there.
Huh. Yep, I've actually been there one time. I was on my way to Monaco.
Check you guys out.
I didn't mean to, but I was on the way to Monaco for the Grand Prix.
Didn't mean to.
Exactly.
Just turned up.
Monaco cruise with Windstar. We occasionally stop in Cannes. Which is a lot of fun.
Chris, my entire European trip was an accident as far as I was concerned. I knew that I was going to the Grand Prix. My wife had made all the other arrangements, and I didn't really know any of them. So when we did show up, I was like, oh, the Cannes Film Festival is going on. I said, oh, that's convenient. And she rolled her eyes at me. And I was like, oh, that was part of the plan. other than racing. So.
Movies on the beach.
Yes, exactly. A couple other news stories here. Bob, if you've got a couple million bucks laying around and want a racetrack, I would really like it if you were to buy Willow Springs. It's for sale because that's the first racetrack I ever drove on. I drove a Skip Barber car there, an open wheel car, actually, way, way back in the day. And it's for sale for a couple of million bucks. So if you'll put in 1.9, I'll help you with the rest.
They just want to turn it over, or is it being threatened by?
No, it's just up for sale. You know, it's. I just think it's one of those, you know, it's been time. Apparently, in 1962, Bill Huth bought the track and owned it until the day he died in 2015. And then the family's operated it and they're ready to move on. So soft spot in my heart for that, for the what they used to call it, the fastest road in the fastest track in the West.
Yeah, it's a pretty place in a very Western, austere kind of way. And a pretty cool track, I must say, too.
Yeah, I can never forget the big, huge, giant turn at the very end of that track when the instructor said, just keep your foot in it, because if you lift your foot, you will spin.
You're going off, right.
And exactly. I came all the way around, and I made it, but I got two wheel off on the left wheels, and I said, I can either keep two wheels off and go into the pit lane and sacrifice my last lap or try to get back on the track. I turned the wheel and immediately spun to the inside and caused a giant plume of smoke that went up about 100 feet because the dust out there is like talcum powder. And that's when my wife arrived to pick me up. And she said, where is he? And they said, see that pile of smoke out there, that plume of smoke? She was scared for a moment.
That's our boy.
That's him. But Chris, I hear your mic. What's happening?
I thought you were going to say you raised a big crash.
Yeah.
I'm trying to see if we can get a quick word with Zach Brown. It might be tough. He's late for debrief and someone else has done my trick of doing a walk and talk. How dare they? It's whether that ends quickly enough for me to get a question in or two to him. But what I might do now is just talk long enough to see if I can then just seamlessly, you know, I love to kill time this way and just take over the airwaves so that if I can jump in, I don't lose a second of any of that chance. There's some guests here as well that are getting right in the way, annoyingly. Try not to ask anyone to move because they're having the day of their lives and I don't want to ruin it, but just trying to find a bit of space. Sadly, I think Zach might be nearly at debrief spot, depending on where he's going, because we're now at the FIA hospitality, we're now at the McLaren trucks, so I think he's going into one of these. He is going into one of these, so let's see if we get one question to him, because I've at least sussed the fact that he's got to get into debrief.
now from BBC F1. You are listening to Speed City.
Welcome back to the fastest hour in radio, Speed City.
Thank you, Jenny. Boys, do you know, without looking, who got driver of the day? Take a guess.
Lando Norris.
Did you look or did you guess?
Yeah, I'll go with that.
I saw on Twitter before I came down to do the bulletins and jump on the show.
You kids and your social media.
No, Chris, you're supposed to say, in my view, it was like, you don't say, oh, yeah, I saw the results. So
I feel like that was a vote, though, that was based on Lando adding excitement of trying to close down Max.
Yeah.
But realistically, yes, a guy that wasn't in the fastest car, who made the moves when he had to make it. These are actually questions I can put to Christian Horner now, because he's just right, just come free. So I'll actually put it directly to him once he's had a little briefing, I believe. Christian, I was just saying, Lando Norris won driver of the day, and I said, but then Max Verstappen didn't have the quickest car, it looked like, from the outside today. He made the move stick when he had to early on. He made a good start, and he won a Grand Prix under pressure. Is that a fair assessment of Max's performance?
Yes, and I think that what you have to remember is that McLaren run a slightly offset strategy. So at times they're 9 seconds behind, but that's never the real deficit because, you know, with the offset of a better tyre, that gap is always going to close. So that sometimes accentuates what the difference in the cars looks like. But they've got a very quick car. Lando's driving it very well. And today was all about small margins. And Max, you know, delivered the start, passing Lando, nailing George very quickly, and then managing the perfect race. And, it was always going to get closer at the end, but we felt that we should have just enough, to hold Lando off.
If I put it another way, though, if they were the top two, Max leading Lando at the end of lap one, do you think you have enough to hold him off from that point if they were line astern? Was the McLaren a bit quicker today?
The McLaren was quick, particularly at the end of the stint. You can see their degradation is good. So that's an area that we need to work on. I think we're taking a lot of good lessons out of these last few races.
Well, yeah, I want to put it that way. People almost do seem to get bored with the same team and same driver winning. But I made the point that I think the last three races won by Max arguably have been won without having the best car or the fastest car. And the team and he have executed perfectly. Is that a strength that's maybe been underappreciated about how well you guys perform, even when you don't have the performance advantage you have had?
Well, I think the key is always to deliver to your optimum and deliver under pressure. And I think that's where the team's done an incredible job of, you get found out when you're running at the front. There's nowhere to hide. And the strategy's got to be good. The pit stops have got to be sharp. The starts have got to be good. And the driver's got to deliver. And all of those things are happening, which is why we've won 70% of the races so far. Now, four of those races have been incredibly tight, but we keep doing enough to keep our opposition behind us.
Yeah, but that opposition looks very close. What's it looking like for the rest of the season? Has this been a yardstick that it's going to be like this all the way through?
It will swing around, I'm sure, over the next part of the season for sure. And there'll be some circuits that suit us. There'll be some circuits that suit Ferrari or McLaren that seem to be becoming the most consistent of challengers. And Mercedes are up and down. So behind Lando and Max today, there was circa 18 seconds to the cars behind, which is the same gap as last year.
But then Checo was kind of nowhere in that race based on track position, based on the penalty he had and where he qualified. How quickly do you need to get him back up in that fight because of the points that other teams are starting to score?
Well, I think Hill had taken a bit of confidence out of today. He drove a good race. P8 on all our simulations in a normal race was his maximum. He achieved that. So he achieved his target today.
And thoughts on Austria next week?
Great to be heading to our home race. A packed, sold-out Austrian crowd sprint race. I'm looking forward to having some Wiener Schnitzel and, getting back in front of the home crowd.
Well, we're looking forward to another competitive weekend, but well done today.
Chris, no other
hats. Don't ignore the strudel.
No other hats for Christian Horner? No Mercedes hat?
No, they don't quite have kind of relationship, do they? Toto Wolff is not far away from him either, but Toto's not wearing a hat either. So I'll see if we can grab a word with him in a bit. He's in a big scrum that's going to be tough to get into the middle of. And I'm going to head back down towards Alpine. I mentioned them earlier.
Yeah.
I want to see if there's anyone from Alpine I can speak to, because I think double points again. And it was pointed out, and I think actually Bob might have mentioned it in the pre-race show, but the turnaround from Alpine, maybe it's in yesterday's show, but from where they started the season.
Yeah.
We've not been a greater storyline about Flavio Briatore's return this weekend, but got to just look solely at the car and its performance and the improvement of that car through the year so far. Very impressive. And these are the sorts of things that then make it look like someone like Aston Martin are having a terrible run. Because actually we're seeing some really big gains from certain teams. Mercedes obviously made huge strides this year from where they started. And Alpine the same now, putting themselves right in that point scoring mix.
I wanted to talk about pit lane speeding. I think what, Magnussen and Tsunoda had a 5-second penalty and maybe more others. Also noticed more lockups than usual in heading up to that to the speed limit line. Was that just me?
That one you get quite a lot here in terms of speed limit line because it's so high speed into that. Normally the final corner's flat out. They do lift off a bit, but it's a quick pit entry. And it's 22 seconds you lose the pit lane. So you're trying to minimize how much time you're going to lose. And that's a big gain or loss is how much you attack that pit entry line. Now, also, you can ruin your tyres. Yeah, you can hammer on the brakes and ruin them because you're not going to use them anymore. So it doesn't matter. I think it was Hülkenberg who was done for pit lane speeding alongside Tsunoda, which will have been, I think, exactly at that point, like you say, just pushing the entry a bit too hard.
Okay.
Partly as well, because if you're trying to overcut or undercut another driver, because track position is so key here, you're really going to push the limits there. It's almost worth the risk. And then Magnussen actually got done for jumping the start.
That's what it was.
So, that was a bit odd. I haven't seen a replay of that, but there's been a few of those more recently. I don't know if it's like clutch issues. Not really quite sure on the reason why we had three or four occasions that.
I wonder if there's a common clutch vendor manufacturer out there that has an issue. That's just a random thought. But hey, going back to the pit lane speeding. I've noticed what you did. Obviously, the lockups, right? And you don't care about your tires. But how do when you lock up a tire, that's the first thing they taught me at Skip Barber Race School, was that when you lock up a tire, you have no control, right? So you're locking up your tires. I think you lock them up and you skid right across the line at a faster rate of speed and you break the speed limit and get a penalty. So I don't know why so much lockup. It seems like a not a great strategy.
Well, you're not intentionally going to lock up, as you're saying, and still be on the brakes, but it's that you are hitting them that hard because you're attacking that line so hard. And also because you're then slowing to quite a slow speed, 80 kilometers an hour is slow for an F1 car, then you're getting less downforce from the car working aerodynamically. So therefore, you're more likely to lock the tire.
But and they probably don't practice that a lot either.
No, exactly. Because they'll practice attacking the pit entry, but normally their reaction as a racing driver would be to get off the brake a little bit to stop that lockup happening and to rotate the wheel again. But you can't afford to do that going to the pit entry because you're going to hit that line. So I think it just leads to that ongoing lockup. But good point. It was a bigger kind of issue or notable issue today than at many races.
And as you pointed out, it's a long pit lane. We saw some pit entries. I think I recall Lando Norris. I mean, they come whomping into that pit lane, before they jump on the brakes to get down to the pit lane speed limit at the line we've been discussing. And I'm sure it's really easy to get that wrong.
Certainly is. They've got to try and maximize every bit. And as we talked about, 2.2 seconds today is the gap at the line. 0.8 of that we can attribute to the second round of pit stops. That was the difference between Verstappen's and Norris's second pit stops. And they have it as well. If you can gain another couple of tenths on the entry, there's a full second. That's half the gap between the two cars at the end of the race. It's so crucial.
And obviously the thing you don't want to do is get nicked for speeding in the pit lane. You don't care if you lock up the tires on your pit entry because you're taking them off anyway. You just want to do it as efficiently as possible time-wise to minimize the damage.
Hey, Chris, while we're waiting on you to grab somebody else, I want to talk about this headline this week about Brad Pitt's Formula One movie gets a June 2025 release date. So apparently June 27th nationally, and I think June 20th, or is that here in the States? But around June 27th.
Other way around, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, 25th, which chat about it on Wheel to Wheel as well, didn't we, in the week? But 25th of June next year is the international one. And for some reason, two extra days, everyone has to wait in North America. So I'll give you the full review on the show this time next year.
Just take your phone in and film it for me so I can watch it early, Chris, like the Seinfeld episode. Hey, also, you're going to be able to watch it.
I wonder if they're going to take it to the
IMAX. You can be able to watch it in IMAX. Was that what you're going to say, Bob?
No, I was going to wonder if they're going to take it to the Cannes Film Festival.
Oh, yeah.
Because occasionally I turn up there.
Huh. Yep, I've actually been there one time. I was on my way to Monaco.
Check you guys out.
I didn't mean to, but I was on the way to Monaco for the Grand Prix.
Didn't mean to. Exactly. Just turned up.
On my Monaco cruise with Windstar, we occasionally stop in Cannes. which is a lot of fun.
Chris, my entire European trip was an accident as far as I was concerned. I knew that I was going to the Grand Prix. My wife had made all the other arrangements, and I didn't really know any of them. So when we did show up, I was like, oh, the Cannes Film Festival is going on. I said, oh, that's convenient. And she rolled her eyes at me. And I was like, oh, that was part of the plan. So, other than racing. So.
Movies on the beach.
Yes, exactly. A couple other news stories here. Bob, if you've got a couple million bucks laying around and want a racetrack, I would really like it if you were to buy Willow Springs. It's for sale because that's the first racetrack I ever drove on. I drove a Skip Barber car there, an open wheel car, actually, way, way back in the day. And it's for sale for a couple million bucks. So if you'll put in 1.9, I'll help you with the rest.
They just want to turn it over, or is it being threatened by
development? No, it's just up for sale. You know, it's... I just think it's one of those, you know, it's been time. Apparently, in 1962, Bill Huth bought the track and owned it until the day he died in 2015. And then the family's operated it, and they're ready to move on. So, soft spot in my heart for that, for the what they used to call it, the fastest road in the fastest track in the West.
Yeah, it's a pretty place in a very Western, austere kind of way. And a pretty cool track, I must say, too.
Yeah, I can never forget the big, huge, giant turn at the very end of that track when the instructor said, just keep your foot in it, because if you lift your foot, you will spin.
You're going off, right.
And exactly. I came all the way around, and I made it, but I got two wheel off on the left wheels, and I said, I can either keep two wheels off and go into the pit lane and sacrifice my last lap or try to get back on the track. I turned the wheel and immediately spun to the inside and caused a giant plume of smoke that went up about 100 feet because the dust out there is like talcum powder. And that's when my wife arrived to pick me up. And she said, where is he? And they said, see that pile of smoke out there, that plume of smoke? She was scared for a moment.
That's our boy.
That's him. But Chris, I hear your mic. What's happening?
I thought happening? You were going to say you raised a big crash.
Yeah.
I'm trying to see if we can get a quick rub with Zach Brown. It might be tough. He's late for debrief and someone else has done my trick of doing a walk and talk. How dare they? It's whether that ends quickly enough for me to get a question in or two to him. But what I might do now is just talk long enough to see if I can then just seamlessly, you know, I love to kill time this way and just take over the airwaves so that if I can jump in, I don't lose a second of any of that chance. There's some guests here as well that are getting right in the way, annoyingly. Try not to ask anyone to move because they're having the day of their lives and I don't want to ruin it, but just trying to find a bit of space. Sadly, I think Zach might be nearly at debrief spot, depending on where he's going, because we're now at the FIA hospitality, we're now at the McLaren trucks, so I think he's going into one of these. He is going into one of these, so let's see if we get one question to him, because I've at least sussed the fact that he's got to get into debrief.
You don't need a camera, Chris, just painting the picture.
I try my best. So he's going to go, I reckon I've got about 15 paces of Zach Brown here at best. He's being held up still by this one. I don't think they've got the hint that he was late for debrief. So his answers got very short. Right, you're late for debrief, Zach, I know. So let's get inside. But very quickly, how do you view the outcome of that race? Bittersweet?
Anytime we can finish on the podium, two cars in the points is a good day. A little disappointing. I think we maybe could have won, but... awesome race. Car was super fast. We'll see why we got a little bit of wheel spin there. See if we can help out next time. But overall, very good weekend.
Going to win in Austria instead?
We're going to try.
Good luck. Thank you.
Nice.
It's a good day when you can say we could have won.
Yeah,
absolutely. I must admit, I agree with Lando, though. I think the word is should rather than could, because we've seen it enough times now, haven't we? We've spoken about McLaren in this way. I think every post-race chat with Zach of the last... I guess not Monaco, and I can't remember if I even spoke to him in Imola, but the two before that, the latest two, Canada and this one, kind of have talked about, well, if you got things right, would you or should you have won that race? And there's so many opportunities now. They've got to start taking them. Like he said, got to look at the reasons why there was wheel spin. I don't want to criticize too much, but you know, I did kind of make the point with Red Bull. It's impressive that they do execute and get the win, even when maybe it's 49%, 51% against them.
Yeah, and all you got to do is look at those pit stops again. They were just perfect. Almost. They I think Verstappen's 2.8 was their slow one. I mean, that's when you know you're doing good. There was, by the way, there was a bunch of pit stops. Gasly had a 6.7 and Magnussen had a 9. I don't know exactly what happened. There was several. There was a few, Russell had a 5.3. So there was a bunch of not
there were
great
some
pit stops.
Stuck rear wheels.
Yeah, that's probably what it was.
You know, we always used to say in running, if you're running a slow marathon, it's easy to take big chunks of time off to your personal best. But it's when you're, you know, you get up there into the really fast times that it's so much more difficult to find more speed to improve. And, you know, that happens. You get closer to the front of a Formula One field and the margins get so close that it's really hard to find those little bits. As you say, those tenths of a second in the pit stop. That can make such a difference at the end of a race.
All right. Well, coming up after this, we're going to talk about a story that Bob Varsha put in our documents today about Adrian Newey and a secret visit. You're listening to Speed City. Back after these messages.
This is David Hobbs, and you're listening to Speed City.
Welcome back to the fastest hour in radio, Speed City.
All right, welcome back. A dancing Bob Varsha wants to talk about a secret meeting that Adrian Newey had.
Well, you know, we all know Adrian Newey and what he's going to do now that he's leaving the Red Bull team are quite the topic of the moment, perhaps more so than any of the drivers, with the possible exception of Carlos Sainz. A lot of money was on Ferrari, but it has come to light. What's the short version? It's come to light that Adrian paid a visit, a downbeat, quiet visit to Aston Martin's new facility, which totally makes sense. I mean, he wants to see what they're doing there at the Silverstone circuit. And he is working with them on a hypercar project. So he has plenty of cover for his reasons to go there. But I wouldn't be surprised if he was also wondering what he could accomplish, joining with Lawrence Stroll's unlimited checkbook and the skills of Fernando Alonso, who's there under a new contract. So, I think that certainly sent some buzz up and down the pit lane at the prospect of Adrian at Aston Martin, as opposed to Ferrari, which is where I think everybody thought he was going to be going, including myself.
Yeah. What do you think, Chris?
Yeah, I was saying actually in the break, I don't mind saying on air as well now, that I did hear secondhand, very much secondhand, that that Red Bull believes that he's ready to sign at Aston Martin. So, I don't know exactly how much detail they would get out of that. I'm not sure if the relationship's good enough that Adrian would actually tell them that's where I'm going or that's the plan. That's very much the hunch within the team that he's leaving.
On a related note, for the Adrian Newey story, I learned, and I don't think we've talked about this, that McLaren's board of directors approached Zach Brown about, should we make the effort to get Adrian Newey? And Brown said no, because he has so much confidence in the company he's built and the technical brain trust that they put together that apparently Zach, and I don't mean to put words in his mouth, but I think he thought, Adrian would be a large rock in a small pond if you dropped him in there and might, cause issues that would be detrimental to the effort of the team. So nothing against Adrian, who, is every bit as important as his reputation suggests he is. But apparently Zach said, that's not a move that I think we should make right now. So McLaren came off the list.
And those issues.
Yeah, very.
Those issues
sorry,
start
say,
with
very
the
similar to that.
The CFO would have the issues because of the check. Go ahead, Chris. Sorry.
Wow.
That's all right. Sorry. We didn't have a delay yesterday, and I keep jumping in, and we have one today. It's right. My fault at this end of the pond. But I actually heard very similar that Zach then did a bit of research, asked a few questions to gauge opinion from other people in the paddock as well about whether they should go hard after Newey, and was almost warned off it based on if McLaren is so close. Look at them. Quickest car today, really. Mm-hmm. And if Newey then goes in and they get it over the line and win a championship, it will be the Adrian Newey effect. And yet all that hard work that's been done for years at that team, turning it around, would go slightly under-rewarded or under-appreciated. Mm-hmm. It's not anything, as you say, against Adrian. It's just kind of how it could look if they were finally successful. And it's tough, isn't it? Because if they're not finally successful, maybe he could have been the guy that helped them get over the line. But yeah, that was another part of the thinking.
Yeah, the trajectory that McLaren has done since these really a year now, right? The results have taken this over, started a year ago.
Yeah.
And it's not been linear, because you'll never get purely linear in Formula One, but it's been pretty close to that. I mean, it's just been amazing. And you don't want to dilute that by doing that. I get it. And besides the giant check that you'd have to write. And speaking of giant check, that is Aston Martin. Lawrence Stroll has written plenty of giant checks and is not hesitant to do that. So I don't see why that is a problem. I think that could easily be more than just a rumor because of his ability to write the check and his willingness to write that check.
I would also say it's quite almost refreshing to see that Newey left because he felt, you know what, I want a bit of a break and it's time for a new challenge. But he didn't kind of wait until he had the next move confirmed. He knew. He had so much confidence in his own stock, but also was like, you know, it's kind of time to go. I'm going to work it out and we'll go. And then I'll see what everyone comes to me with. And it's, you know, originally everyone was like, oh, he's definitely going to Ferrari. It must be already a done deal. That's why he's there for a bull. But it wasn't. It was, you know, this guy was so confident in his standing within his sport, rightly so, that he was like, right, well, I'll see what comes my way and then take the pick of the offers. If I don't like any of them, you know, I'll be out of F1 for a little while. It's quite a refreshing outlook, I think.
Yeah. But we also heard that the passing of Dietrich Mateschitz, who was the man behind the Red Bull Austrian side of the business and spent all this money and built this wonderful organization with Christian Horner and the team, that Adrian became a little disenchanted with the direction of the management and their behavior because he was close to the employee that Christian Horner was alleged to have harassed, and that, you know, did nothing for his attitude toward remaining at Red Bull.
Yeah.
So make of that what you will.
Hey, I want to go back to the race real quick. You just got it 3 or 4 minutes, but I was just going through some of the social media F1, and they replayed that wheel-to-wheel lap from Lando and George. That was some fantastic racing, wasn't
pretty
it?
Cool.
I mean, they changed positions twice, and fantastic racing, and two young, amazing drivers.
Yeah, what was great there was how key it was, wasn't it, to both of their races. I think George knew that actually if he could keep Lando behind, that also gave a buffer to Lewis, and he'd done it for so many laps at the start of the race that, who knows, with Lando on the soft tyre, maybe he could get them to chew them up and eventually they would drop off. But Lando knew, because of the way the start of the race had gone, that he had to get it done there. So there's a lot riding on that, and for them to keep it clean. Yeah. But yeah, so exciting. Yeah, that was really good to watch. I mean, that's the sort of stuff. Don't forget, this is a track you're not meant to be able to overtake on, and it's always been really difficult for overtaking. These cars have got more and more developed as well, so it is harder to follow with these cars. We did see the impact of that this weekend. But still, you get racing like that. People, I think, do sometimes not give enough credit to the step that was made with the 2022 rules that do just create more of the potential for this sort of stuff at tracks that we didn't used to get it so much.
And we saw both sides of the, did he leave me enough room equation this weekend? Who was it? Sainz went off a couple of times and claimed he got pushed and nothing was done about it. You watch two guys racing as hard as you can race, but still giving each other enough room. There were some dives down the inside from each driver. And each time it was just wheel to wheel, about as close as you could be. But they were careful to allow each other racing room. It was just so much fun to watch. We think about aggressive passing attempts, but we don't talk so much about, I don't know, aggressive defense. Is that the right way to put it? But legitimate defense without, you know, endangering the battle.
I saw George Russell do the same move in that battle and in one before where he, you know, the car's coming up behind him with DRS and he immediately moves to the right to break the toe and then unsuccessfully was able to defend that, but back and forth. But it made for great racing. Well, guys, we are out of time. Next weekend, Austria. We are back at it, of course. But thanks, everybody, for tuning in today. And go to our website, speedcitybroadcast.com, and see all of our shows and when to watch and all that. We'll keep you up to speed for next week. And if you like what you heard today, tell everybody. Tell your friends. Thanks, everybody. We'll talk to you next week.
This is David Hobbs, and you're listening to Speed City.
Welcome back to the fastest hour in radio, Speed City.
All right, welcome back. A Dancing Bob Varsha wants to talk about a secret meeting that Adrian Newey had.
Well, you know, we all know Adrian Newey and what he's going to do now that he's leaving the Red Bull team are quite the topic of the moment, perhaps more so than any of the drivers, with the possible exception of Carlos Sainz. A lot of money was on Ferrari, but it has come to light. What's the short version? It's come to light that Adrian paid a visit, a downbeat, quiet visit to Aston Martin's new facility, which totally makes sense. I mean, he wants to see what they're doing there at the Silverstone circuit. And he is working with them on a hypercar project. So he has plenty of cover for his reasons to go there. But I wouldn't be surprised if he was also wondering what he could accomplish, joining with Lawrence Stroll's unlimited checkbook and the skills of Fernando Alonso, who's there under a new contract. So, yeah, that I think that certainly sent some buzz up and down the pit lane at the prospect of Adrian at Aston Martin, as opposed to Ferrari, which is where I think everybody thought he was going to be going, including myself.
Yeah, what do you think, Chris?
Yeah, I was saying actually in the break, I don't mind saying on air as well now, that I did hear, yeah, secondhand, very much secondhand, that that Red Bull believes that he's ready to sign at Aston Martin. So, I don't know exactly how much detail they would get out of that. I'm not sure if the relationship's good enough that, you know, Adrian would actually tell them that's where I'm going or that's the plan. But yeah, that's very much the hunch within the team that he's leaving.
On a related note, for the Adrian Newey story, I learned, and I don't think we've talked about this, that McLaren's board of directors approached Zach Brown about, should we make the effort to get Adrian Newey? And Brown said no, because he has so much confidence in the company he's built and the technical, brain trust that they put together that apparently Zach, and I don't mean to put words in his mouth, but I think he thought, you know, Adrian would be a large rock in a small pond if you dropped him in there and might, you know, cause issues that would be detrimental to the effort of the team. So nothing against Adrian, who, you know, is every bit as important as his reputation suggests he is. But apparently Zach said, no, you know, that's not a move that I think we should make right now. So McLaren came off the list.
And those issues.
Yeah, very.
Those issues
sorry,
start
I was gonna
with
say, very similar to that.
The CFO would have the issues because of the check. Go ahead, Chris. Sorry.
Wow.
That's all right. Sorry. We didn't have a delay yesterday, and I keep jumping in, and we have one today. It's my fault at this end of the pond. But I actually heard very similar that Zach then did a bit of research, asked a few questions to gauge opinion from other people in the paddock as well about whether they should go hard after Newey, and was almost warned off it based on if McLaren is so close. Look at them. Yeah, quickest car today, really. Mm-hmm. And if Newey then goes in and they get it over the line and win a championship, it will be the Adrian Newey effect. And yet all that hard work that's been done for years at that team, turning it around, would go slightly under-rewarded or under-appreciated. Mm-hmm. It's not anything, as you say, against Adrian. It's just kind of how it could look if they were finally successful. And it's tough, isn't it? Because if they're not finally successful, maybe he could have been the guy that helped them get over the line. But that was another part of the thinking.
Yeah, the trajectory that McLaren has done since these really a year now, right? The results have taken this over, started a year ago.
Yeah.
And it's not been linear, because you'll never get purely linear in Formula One, but it's been pretty close to that. I mean, it's just been amazing. And you don't want to dilute that by doing that. I get it. And besides the giant check that you'd have to write, and speaking of giant check, that is Aston Martin. Lawrence Stroll has written plenty of giant checks and is not hesitant to do that. So I don't see why that is a problem. I think that could easily be more than just a rumor because of his ability to write the check and his willingness to write that check.
I would also say it's quite almost refreshing to see that Newey left because he felt, you know what, I want a bit of a break and it's time for a new challenge. But he didn't kind of wait until he had the next move confirmed.
he knew he had so much confidence in his own stock, but also was like, you know, it's kind of time to go. I'm going to work it out and we'll go. And then I'll see what everyone comes to me with. And it's, you know, originally everyone's like, oh, he's definitely going to Ferrari. It must be already a done deal. That's why he's there for a bull. But it wasn't. It was, you know, this guy was so confident in his standing within the sport, rightly so, that he was like, right, well, I'll just, I'll see what comes my way and then and take the pick of the offers. If I don't like any of them, you know, I'll be out of F1 for a little while. It's quite a refreshing outlook, I think.
Yeah. But we also heard that the passing of Dietrich Mateschitz, who was the man behind the Red Bull Austrian side of the business and spent all this money and built this wonderful organization with Christian Horner and the team, that Adrian became a little disenchanted with the direction of the management and their behavior because he was close to the employee that Christian Horner was alleged to have harassed. And that, you know, did nothing for his attitude toward remaining at Red Bull.
Yeah.
So make of that what you will.
Hey, I want to go back to the race real quick. You just got it three or four minutes. But I was just going through some of the social media F1 and they replayed that wheel-to-wheel lap from Lando and George. That was some fantastic racing, wasn't
pretty
it?
Cool.
I mean, they changed positions twice and fantastic racing and two young, amazing drivers.
Yeah, what was great there was how key it was, wasn't it, to both of their races. I think George knew that actually if he could keep Lando behind, it also gave a buffer to Lewis. And he'd done it for so many laps at the start of the race that who knows, with Lando on the soft tire, maybe he could get them to chew them up and eventually they would drop off. But Lando knew, because of the way the start of the race had gone, that he had to get it done there. So there's a lot riding on that. And for them to keep it clean, but so exciting. Yeah, that was really good to watch. I mean, that's the sort of stuff, don't forget, this is a track you're not meant to be able to overtake on and has always been really difficult for overtaking. These cars have got more and more developed as well. So it is harder to follow with these cars. We did see the impact of that this weekend. But still, you get racing like that. People, I think, do sometimes not give enough credit to the step that was made with the 2022 rules that do just create more of the potential for this sort of stuff at tracks that we didn't used to get it so much.
And we saw both sides of the, did he leave me enough room equation this weekend? Who was it? Sainz went off a couple of times and claimed he got pushed and nothing was done about it. You watch two guys racing as hard as you can race, but still giving each other enough room. There were some dives down the inside from each driver. And each time it was just wheel to wheel, about as close as you could be. But they were careful to allow each other racing room. It was just so much fun to watch. We think about aggressive passing attempts, but we don't talk so much about, I don't know, aggressive defense. Is that the right way to put it? But legitimate defense without, endangering the battle.
I saw George Russell do the same move in that battle and in one before where he the car's coming up behind him with DRS and he immediately moves to the right to break the toe and then unsuccessfully was able to defend that, but back and forth. But it made for great racing. Well, guys, we are out of time. Next weekend, Austria. We are back at it, of course. But thanks, everybody, for tuning in today. And go to our website, speedcitybroadcast.com, and see all of our shows and when to watch and all that. We'll keep you up to speed for next week. And if you like what you heard today, tell everybody. Tell your friends. Thanks, everybody. We'll talk to you next week.